जगन पूरी धाम की जाए, गंग मई जमुन देवी की जाए, भक्ति देवी की जाए, तुलसी महारानी की जाए, समवेत भक्त वृंद की जाए, गौर प्रेमानंद. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Nanda. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and all omission Pranaya. Krishna Prasad, Mutalay, Srimadhi, Bhakti, Vedanta, Swami, Jinnamani. Namaste, Sarasvati, Deva, Yorah, Vandana, Pachani, Yusasa, Sumilan, Paskachari, Sutani. Vandayam, Sri Guru, Sri Utah, Padakamalam, Sri Guru, Vaishnavam, Chacha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Rajanatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Shri Vishatam Vitam Shatam Vashtam 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
March 1st, 2020 and 2021 in Hillsborough, North Carolina. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 47. Ivanyam bhajate yam shri Parasparshasayasakrit Swatma dosha pavargena Tadyancha janamohini. Giving up. Anyan, others, bhajate, worships, yam, which lord, shri, the goddess of fortune, padasparsha, for the touch of his lotus feet, ashaya, with the desire, asakrit, constantly, swa atma, of herself, dosha, the faults of fickleness and pride. Apavargena, putting aside, tat, his, yantya, begging, jana, ordinary humans, mohini, bewildering. Translation, this is the Yogi Brahman is speaking. Hoping for the touch of his lotus feet, the goddess of fortune perpetually worships him alone, leaving aside all others and renouncing her pride and fickleness. That he begs is certainly astonishing to everyone. BBT purport. The supreme master of the goddess of fortune herself obviously does not have to beg for food, as pointed out here by the Brahmanas who are finally manifesting real spiritual intelligence. Okay, let's look at Krishna book. If someone denies the self-sufficiency of Krishna on hearing that he was tending the cows for his livelihood, or someone doubts his not being in need of the food thinking he was actually hungry, then such a person should understand that the goddess of fortune is always engaged in his service. In this way, the goddess can break her faulty habit of restlessness. In Vedic literatures like the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that Krishna is served in his abode with great respect by not only one goddess of fortune, but by many thousands. Therefore, it is simply illusion for one to think that Krishna begged food from the Brahmanas. It was actually a trick to show them mercy by teaching them that they should accept him in pure devotional service instead of engaging in ritualistic ceremonies. Let's take a look at Jiva Goswami's commentary. He says, though he makes you remember him, why do you not remember him? When she appeared during the churning of the milk ocean, she enacted the pastime of choosing a husband. Talking about the goddess of fortune. At that time, she ignored others and served him constantly, without being touched by the faults of the material Lakshmi, who was her expansion, Swatma. Thus, he should not beg for food. That act bewildered everyone, including us, so we did not think he was the Lord. So the Brahmanas are here giving an excuse. How could he be the Lord? When he came, you know, when his friends came begging food on his behalf, we're like, that's not the Lord. The Lord is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Okay, looking at Sanatana Goswami, his teeth, we're not going to read the whole thing. By his will, he can deliver anyone from samsara. Why did he beg food, unbecoming of the Lord? That question is raised in this verse. With the desire to touch his lotus feet once, or to touch even one foot once, Sakrit, Lakshmi serves him. Or with the desire to touch his feet, she serves continually, Asakrit. In that condition, always with Lakshmi or wealth, how could he beg? Thus his begging is bewildering for all jivas. Who can understand his actions? Or he does this to bewilder the non-devotees and nourish the bhakti in his devotees. The non-devotees are bewildered, but the devotees are not. On the contrary, their bhakti increases. By his human pastimes, the Supreme Lord stimulates intense bhakti, where such actions enchant the devotees' hearts. Sanatana Goswami discusses some other things. So here the Brahmanas are making an excuse. Well, we didn't know it was Krishna. How are we supposed to know he was the Lord? The Lord is the husband of Lakshmi. Lakshmi is eager to touch even one of his feet once, even though she's normally fickle. So, you know, if he's coming begging, how could he be the Lord if he's coming begging? Now, Krishna often comes in disguise. As Prabhupada says in a Krishna book, he wanted to show mercy to the Brahmins by coming in disguise. I know the famous Christian writer C.S. Lewis, he said that the Lord doesn't usually appear in all of his opulence with all of his power because he wants to give us a choice as to whether or not to serve him. And you see, the Lord often comes in disguise in order to see how the devotees will relate to him when they don't know that he's the Lord. Right? Jesus says that too. He says that angels come in disguise to see how you treat guests. And we have this sort of situation in the Bhagavatam with the demigods, say, with Ranti Dev, where they take some disguise to see how is he going to respond if they don't know that he's the demigod. Yeah. Because we tend to respond quite differently if we know that somebody is a very powerful or exalted person, isn't it? Isn't that a fact? Right? If we know that someone's rich or powerful or whatever, we're going to want to serve them for our own self-interest. We're going to think, well, I should serve this person because then they'll be able to do something for me. But if they appear as a simple, ordinary person, we may neglect them. This is one of the items of bathing in donkey urine that Bhaktivinoda lists in his commentary in Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha. Text five or six. So Raghunath Das Goswami gives the example that if we're doing devotional service that's ill-motivated, we may think that that service is purifying us, but actually we're bathing in donkey urine, thinking we're getting clean, and the donkey urine is making us just stink, and it's burning us. So if somebody's apparently engaging in bhakti, but they're always feeling dissatisfied and agitated and disturbed and angry, and then there's something wrong with their motivations. And one of the ways of bathing in donkey urine is to give a lot of special facility and worship and respect to people who are rich or powerful and to neglect humble devotees. You know, in the name of service. So we're thinking, well, we're doing service by treating these rich people specially. Obviously, you have to treat rich people specially to some extent because they expect that. They'll be offended if you don't. But one should not offend the humble, simple devotees, thinking, oh, that's just the pot washer. You know, that's just the gardener. That's just the garbage man. So Krishna comes in these humble disguises or in some sort of disguises to see about the devotees' love. So thinking about, and also, of course, sometimes to bewilder the demons. Right, as we're reading Sanatana Goswami is saying that the non-devotees become bewildered. So I was thinking of some, I'm sure you can all think of a lot more examples, how Krishna came disguised as a brahmana to see Jarasandha. Right, with Arjuna and Bhima, they all came disguised as brahmanas. And they got Jarasandha to agree, okay, I'll give you whatever you want because you're brahmanas. And he had some suspicion. I don't really think they're brahmanas. They're really commanding. You know, Sakshi is sending, they don't sound like humble brahmanas, and they had marks of bows on their shoulder from carrying bows all the time. But still he thought, oh, okay, they're dressed like brahmanas. Right? And here we're saying, the brahmanas are saying Mohini, how Krishna is bewildering everyone. And Krishna actually came as Mohini to bewilder the demons. Right? They didn't know it was Vishnu. When they found that it was Vishnu, they got really angry. You know, when Mohini calls her Chakra to cut off Rahu's head because he had snuck in with the demigods, the demons were furious. They're like, we didn't know you were Vishnu. We wouldn't have been nice to you if we'd known that you were Vishnu. Right? We have also Vamandevi with Bali Maharaj. She comes as a little boy, Ramana. And Bali's just captivated. Sure, I'll give you whatever you want. And Sukracharya says, this is Vishnu in disguise. And Bali's like, you know, but he's kind of like a little baby boy. How can I not give him what he wants? Right? I was also thinking that Krishna comes as a little boy with Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri had this vow that he would never ask anyone for food, that he wouldn't beg. Generally, the Parivrajakacharyas, they maintain themselves by begging, although Prabhupada explains over and over and over that they're not beggars. They're going to give transcendental knowledge, but if they go to someone's house and say, hey, I want to give you transcendental knowledge, they might not let you in. But if they say, hey, we're mendicant monks, we need something to eat, then the householders, out of kindness and charity, will give them something, and then they can give transcendental knowledge. Right, so Vamadeva came as this little baby boy, and he came also as this little boy to Madhavendra Puri, who was a baby. And he's just like, if anyone's going to give me food, they're going to give me food. If they're not going to give me food, they're not going to give me food. And this little boy comes up to him and says, actually, he says, here I'm the authority and nobody fasts. And still Madhavendra Puri didn't quite get that, you know, that Krishna was saying that he was the authority and nobody fasts in his village. And he gives Madhavendra Puri some milk to drink. Yes, a similar thing happened with Bilva Mangala Thakur. Right? He went to Vrindavan as an intentionally blind man, and this little boy comes and feeds him, and he has no idea he's Krishna. Both Madhavendra Puri and Bilva Mangala Thakur later realized, oh, I've dealt with Krishna. And a similar thing happened with Jayadeva Goswami and his wife Padmavati. Jayadeva Goswami is writing Gita Govinda, and he wants to write that Krishna falls at Radharani's feet, but he's thinking, I don't know if that's very appropriate. You know, Krishna's God. How's he falling at Radharani's feet? It just doesn't feel right. I want to write it, but it doesn't feel right to me. And he goes to take a bath, and Krishna comes disguised as Jayadeva Goswami. And he comes, and Padmavati, Jayadeva's wife, thinks it's her husband. Oh, you come back from your bath. Okay, you know, can I have my lunch? And so he eats his lunch. I'm going to go in my room to write. And Krishna writes in Gita Govinda, Krishna falls at the feet of Radharani. Right? And then he just disappears. So then Padmavati's, she's having her lunch, and she's cleaning up, and, you know, probably distributing the rest of the beggars and stuff, and then actually Jayadeva comes back. And he's like, I want my lunch. And she's like, huh? There isn't any lunch left. You already ate. I ate. I distributed all the leftovers. There's nothing here. He says, you're crazy. What are you talking about? I just walked in the door. She says, no, you came before. You did all these things. And then what did I do? Then you went in your room to write. And he goes in his room to write, and he sees that and still, the ink is still wet that Krishna has written. And there's a similar but different story with one acharya. It's hard to know who the acharya is, we hear different names, where he didn't accept yogakshema vahamyaham. He said it's not Krishna who personally takes care of us. He does it through agents. right? And so he crossed this out of his Bhagavad Gita. And then he went to take a bath. And then these two beautiful boys come carrying food on sticks. You may have seen this sometime, like you have a stick on your shoulders and you have a basket on the stick, they're carrying these sticks. And they come to his house and they say to the wife, your husband has sent us with all this food. And she said, we're not wealthy. How did he pay for all this opulent food? He said, well, I don't know. He said, told us to bring it. And he was very angry with us. Just see how he beat us. And the boys turn around and they show the wife that there are these marks on their back, bleeding marks on their back. And the wife is horrified. She's like, my husband beat these two boys because they weren't bringing the food fast enough? What is going on? She was furious. You know, and then they leave the food. They say, we better get out of here before your husband comes back. We don't want him beating us again. And then the great Acharya comes and the wife, she's really angry and she tells this story. And he asks her to describe the boys and she's doing that. And he says, oh my goodness, that was Krishna Balaram. And when I crossed out the words in the Bhagavad Gita, it was like I was striking them on their backs. And that Krishna and Balaram are actually bringing directly food. Even with some incarnations like Matsya Avatar, when Satyavrata Muni first saw the little fish, he just thought it was a little fish. You know, it was kind of odd that the fish was talking to him. That was a little out of the ordinary. But he didn't think it was the Lord. And it was only when the fish kept getting bigger, you know, he puts him in a pot, and then the fish says the pot's too big. He puts him in a well, and the well's too big. And he puts him in a pond, and the pond's too big. I don't know how he transported this fish from, like, the pond to the ocean. You know, that's not explained. But finally, Satyavrata Muni realizes, oh, I'm dealing with Vishnu. And of course, in many of Krishna's intimate leelas, he comes in disguise. He comes in disguise as such that even, you know, the mothers don't recognize him, the young gopis don't recognize him, and so forth. Usually he comes disguised as a girl. So he's not recognized. And he does that like if Radharani is angry with him and won't see him, he'll come disguised as a girl and she'll let the girl in. And eventually, it's not always revealed. Sometimes just the girl disappears, apparently, and then Krishna appears. And it's never clear to Srimati Radharani that the girl was Krishna, although her friends sometimes know. That's Prem Sam put the stories like that. There's so many stories like that where Krishna will take on some sort of disguise. Sometimes Krishna disguises himself as a brahmana. So when Jatila comes, Jatila thinks, oh, here's a brahmana to perform the worship of Surya Narayana. And she doesn't understand it's Krishna. And then Krishna's speaking to Radharani and the gopis in all this double entendre, all this words that has all this double meaning and having fun in this kind of disguise. Right, we did a drama, Champaka and I were in a drama many years ago at the Govardhan retreat where Jatila has forbidden Srimati Radharani from cooking for Krishna. And then apparently Radharani is bitten by a snake. And so Jatila calls a snake doctor, a woman snake doctor, who's actually Krishna. And there's this funny scene where Jatila is inviting Krishna into her home, but because she thinks that it's a lady snake doctor, obviously in those days they had women doctors, which is an interesting concept. But anyway, thinking that it was a lady doctor, she invites Krishna into her home. Krishna's kind of cracking up that Radharani's mother-in-law is welcoming him into the home. So Krishna is also very much disguised in this world. While we're studying the Bhagavad Gita, and in chapter 7, I think it's 15, list in chapter 9, I think it's 35, in chapter 10, it's 80-something, then there's about another 10 in chapter 15, where Krishna says, you know, I'm the fire of digestion. I'm the light of the sun. How many of us see the sun and think, well, there's God? How many of us, when we're digesting our food, we just think, I'm digesting my food? We don't perceive the Lord is there, or in our ability. Right? Ahankara vimudha maparthaha miti manyate. We think, it's my ability. I'm so clever. You know, it's my intelligence. It's my memory. Krishna says, no, I'm your memory, I'm your intelligence, I'm your ability. And we don't see it. We just don't perceive it. You know, I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the grandsire. So many things that Krishna says he is, but it's disguised to us. We're going about our life and we don't see him, and so we're interacting with the world as if it's just matter, as if it's just some lifeless machine, instead of seeing that the whole universe is the body of the Lord. And the Lord is present before us everywhere in so many things. Right? We just, like Arjuna says when he sees the universal form, you are air. How many times when we're breathing are we thinking, this is Krishna? This is actually Krishna. Right? And Srila Prabhupada says that for the conditioned soul, to understand Krishna as the sunshine and the moonshine and the digestive fire is a great benefit. You know, I've been working for, my God, oh, many, many years with Kamala Sita on a book that hopefully BBT Africa will publish, where we have a meditation on each of these. And it started when I was with my god sister Kalangana in London. She took me to a swimming pool. It's funny, she said, do you have a baby costume? And I'm like, what? So we go to the swimming pool, and as I'm swimming, I was chanting. I was like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And all of a sudden I thought, water is very soft, but it's also very powerful. And I thought, Krishna is very soft, and he's very powerful. I thought of him in Kamsa's wrestling arena, where he's this young boy, and a lot of the people watching the wrestling are disturbed, thinking, you know, oh, he's this young, delicate boy. It's not a fair match. It wasn't a fair match, but the opposite direction they were thinking. So they were thinking it's not fair to Krishna. And then Krishna just finishes off these gigantic wrestlers. So I was thinking, water is also like that. It's very soft, but it's very strong. And I thought, wow, we can actually find Krishna everywhere. And there's all these descriptions of the universal form in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's quite interesting. You know, especially in the second canto, but also in the eighth canto, in connection with Manandeya. To find that there's Krishna, that the trees are the hairs on Krishna's body. The clouds are the hair on his head. You were just saying the birds are his artistic sense. You know, just like we see these paintings, and I know the artist personally, Madhava Priya, or the paintings there by Krishna Priya. And so whenever I see the paintings, I think of the artist, isn't it? Right, don't we? Every time I see the paintings, I think of the artist. It was really interesting in your class yesterday, I don't know if you noticed it, there was this rainbow effulgence coming from this picture on the camera. Somehow the way the light was hitting it, it was really amazing. But I just think about Madhava Priya, we're putting up the Gorni Thai, right? So when we have the birds, and the birds are a measure of Krishna's artistic sense in their colors of their plumage, in the beauty of their songs, in the gracefulness of their flight. And then we see, oh, there's Krishna. But he's in disguise. Krishna says, I'm the healing herb. You know, do we make herbal tea, or do we take some kind of herbal medicines? Are we thinking the active principle there, that's Krishna? Or are we just going through life kind of blindly, like these brahmanas? Oh, there's some little village boys, they're thinking. We are great intellectual priests and scholars. We are the gurus of society. Village boys bothering us. Just like Hare Krishna, all the time, when we're in India, in the Vrindavan area, we're bothered by the village children, begging, isn't it? I mean, it's constant, every day at least. Even if you're the same, they see you every day, they know that you're never going to give them rupees or chocolate or pencils. They just don't give up, you know, you come out of go onto the parikrama path. Chocolate, chocolate, chocolate. rupees, rupees, pencils, pencils. And we ignore them. Because we know if we don't ignore them, then we're going to be covered with 100 kids asking us for stuff. So we ignore them. Oh, they're village kids. So the Brahmanas have this attitude toward the cowherd boys. Oh, they're village kids. These ignorant village kids pestering us and begging from us. So we go through our life like that. Oh, there's a sanya. Or I send and withhold the rain, Krishna says. So today it's supposed to rain. When the rain comes, do we see, oh, it's Krishna sending the rain? When the rain stops, do we see that Krishna stopped the rain? Or do we just think, oh, yeah, it's rain. Ah, it's raining, my shoes are wet. Or do we think that it's Krishna? And there's another way that Krishna comes in disguise, and this is probably the hardest way to recognize him. And that is in difficulty. As Prabhupada says, when we get wonderful things, everyone can understand it's God sent. That's one of my favorite stories to tell. Actually happened here in Hillsboro. And I was looking through my closet, and I had at that time 3 silk saris, and I thought, it'd be nice to have another silk sari. It should be like heavy silk, beige, with an embroidered border. And I made a picture in my mind of what I would like. And then I thought, next time I go to India, I'll get one. Oh, it'll be at least $40. Oh, it's too much money. Forget about it. So the whole thought was like 20 seconds long, and then I forgot about it. So 3 days later, Golokananda Priya came to pick up her daughter Parijata at the school. Usually when I tell the story, I don't tell the names, but since most of you know this people. So she pulls up at the school to pick up her daughter. Oh, look up. I have a present for you. And she hands me this sari. It was like I had it custom ordered. It was exactly identical to the picture in my mind. And I just started to cry. That's Krishna. I mean, I thank Golokananda Priya too. I didn't just say, well, it's just Krishna, wasn't it? But it was so clear that it was Krishna, and I was crying. I'm like, Krishna, I'm so sorry, I wanted a piece of cloth. I felt so embarrassed that I had some desire for some piece of cloth. I don't have that sorry anymore about that. But when something difficult happens, it's very difficult for us to see that it's Krishna. And one of my god sisters, her husband had a stroke and he became severely incapacitated. He was sick for a long time and just basically really mentally and physically disabled, and then he died. And she, I don't know what she's doing right now, but I know at that time she basically gave up her Krishna consciousness. She said, how can there be a god? This was my only companion, their daughter was grown up. My only shelter, we were so close, we were partners in service. I don't believe in God anymore. But it's interesting, right now I'm studying the 6th and 7th chapter of the first canto. And there Narada Muni is 5 years old. So think of some child you know who's 5 years old. It's still very young. I mean, it's hard for a 5-year-old to really take care of themselves. It would be quite difficult. He never knew his father, single mother, no siblings, no other family members. And he had been instructed by great devotees, by Bhaktivedantas, who had initiated him at 5, which is not the standard operating procedure. Prabhupada usually says 10 or 12, the youngest. But somehow they had initiated him, they saw that he was particularly qualified. And he was practicing Krishna consciousness according to their instructions. And one day his mother went out to milk a cow and got bitten by a snake and died. And he was completely, totally alone in the world. Totally. And somehow at that time, at that place, you know, it wasn't like social services swooped in and put him in foster care. And it's explained by the acharyas that he didn't even stay for his mother's funeral ceremony. I mean, and he was just a little kid. So he started wandering. Prabhupada has some purports there about how it's the duty of the Parivrajika Acharya to wander in order to gain faith in God through fearlessness, to appreciate God within the world, and to enlighten people. But it's really interesting, Prabhupada says in those purports that this death of the mother was the mercy of God. Taking away everything, the kid had nothing. And he said, so the boy would depend on him completely. And that's what Narada did. He took it as mercy. He went deeper and deeper and deeper into his practices. And came to the stage of Baba. Actually, a number of the acharyas say he was a prema. And then he heard the Lord directly. He was in the presence of the Lord directly. And Prabhupada says, materialists misunderstand it. You know, we think that if God is there in our life, that everything's always going to be, you know, that he has like some kind of steamroller going in front of us that's just going to smooth out our path in life. And everything's just going to be perfect. You know, and the blessings of the Lord. And Prabhupada does say this. He says that, you know, if the Lord's pleased with you, he takes everything away. But if he's even more pleased with you, he gives you great opulence to use in his service. He does say that. But sometimes the Lord arranges things to accelerate our devotional service. That's the reason given for Chitraketu becoming cursed, to become Vitrasura, that it was an accelerant. Because Chitraketu was way too attached to the Vidyadhara ladies. So that's the reason given for Parikit becoming bewildered by thirst and fatigue and cursing, and putting the snake on the rishi's neck and getting cursed. That it was an accelerant, that it was noticed Parikshit had become too attached to his family. So Krishna says, okay, push. So Krishna's in disguise then. We see Krishna in fortune. We see that, that's easy for most of us. We see Krishna in somebody giving me the sari that I thought about. That we, oh, wow, that's Krishna. Or the time in Auckland when I was like, I'd like some cashews. And I come to my room and there's a bag of cashews on my dorm room. Then we just see Krishna. But when we lose everything, when the house burns down, when the husband dies, when the child dies, it's hard to see Krishna. He's in disguise. But it's also Krishna. And Prabhupada started the League of Devotees in Jhansi. He was preaching in English, as his Guru Maharaj had requested. And it was taken away. The whole facility was taken away. But that was Krishna, wasn't it? Aren't we all happy that it was taken away? We're like, thank you, Krishna, for taking away Prabhupada's attempt in Jhansi to push him to come to America. So these things are Krishna. And if we see Krishna everywhere and we give him what he wants, what he's apparently begging for, then we become unlimitedly happy. Like the wives of the Brahmanas, they were completely happy, completely satisfied. All their desires were fulfilled. But it takes some surrender and some faith to see that here is Krishna. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes, Maharaj?
Yeah, this is just hypothetical, because I would never do anything foolish.
okay.
The other day I did something, you know, really foolish, but it's Krishna. It was Krishna's arrangement that, you know, I went down the wrong way on a one-way street and smashed my car. That's Krishna.
Well, that's a very interesting thing Maharaj is saying. So if I do something foolish and I go down the wrong way in a one-way street and smash my car, that's Krishna. So it reminds me of when some devotees drowned in Mayapur. And the devotee said to Prabhupada, oh, it was Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said, no, it was your foolishness. And he said the same about car accidents where people were driving and they were tired. So the devotee takes responsibility for their foolishness, but they also see how they can use the situation to surrender to Krishna more. If we think about Maharaj Parikit, Maharaj Parikit did not blame Krishna for his bewilderment. Although, Prabhupada says over and over and over again that Krishna bewildered him. It's like Prabhupada's just pounding in those purports that that Krishna bewildered him. But Maharaj Parikshit never takes that tack. He always takes the tack that I was offensive. But Maharaj Parikshit does go to that the curse of the Brahmin boy was Krishna, that Krishna had taken the form of the curse of the Brahmin boy. So if I do something foolish, I accept that I do something foolish, but I still see Krishna's lessons in that foolishness. I still see how Krishna's there, and he's teaching me something, and he's guiding me.
Krishna bewildered me too.
No, we don't accept it. We don't say like that. Even if that might be true. And sometimes it is true. Sometimes it actually is true. Sometimes Krishna does bewilder the devotees into apparently doing something foolish for some higher purpose. That is true. But the devotee doesn't take that mood. The devotee takes the mood that I'm the fool and I did something foolish. But I can still see Krishna in what's come from this. I can still find Krishna's hand in what's come from this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not that I'm lying in the hospital after crashing my car and I'm like, well, now Krishna's abandoned me.
He kept you alive.
He kept you alive, but you know, Krishna may arrange that you get put in a hospital bed next to the right person for the right reason. Do you follow what I'm saying? And Krishna's really clever. What I see is that Krishna even uses our foolishness for good purposes.
Here's another one. You know, the other day, I just smoked marijuana, you know.
So if someone says, well, Krishna bewildered me to smoke marijuana. Now, the great devotees never blame Krishna for them getting bewildered like that.
So, but was it Krishna who bewildered me?
It was Krishna's Maya who bewildered you.
So I'm not responsible. It just is Maya business.
Well, it says very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita that we can choose what mode we associate with. It's very clear. Prabhupada says you can choose to cultivate the mode of ignorance and conquer goodness and passion. You can choose to cultivate the mode of goodness and conquer passion and ignorance. So yes, it's Krishna's energy, but you can choose. Otherwise, there's no meaning to karma. Yeah.
In regard to that, isn't, you know, if you choose to do something, that's different than having something that looks like fate coming upon you.
Yeah, so just as I was making this point, that it's different than if I choose to do something, it's different than something that looks like fate coming upon me.
I mean, like you're in a place where there's an earthquake.
Right, like
and
an earthquake.
And you didn't choose that, but, you know, you don't blame God for, oh, God, there's an earthquake, you know, but you realize that now, you know, I'm going to have Krishna's
hand. You see Krishna's hand in it.
Yeah.
You see Krishna behind it. But I think that even when we choose to do absolutely stupid things, we can still see, okay, now how does Krishna want me to respond to that?
Yeah,
how can I find Krishna, even though I'm a grade A number one fool?
But there's that example of how strong is Maya, the guy, the sage ran up to a pillar and started to face it.
Yeah. You know,
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.